most important witness in the case of Cecilia Schilling, Sister Zenka, is Helena Corda Wilde, whose name has already been mentioned. She hails from Kemerovo, a town in eastern Slovakia. Helena Corda was born on 5th August 1917 and Cecilia Schilling on 25th December 1916. Helena Corda was married to Alexander Corda, who died in the hospital of Brno prison, Moravia. After 10 years of World War, Alexander Corda worked at the military academy in Hranice na Morava. In May 1949, she was accused of contacts with the anti-communist people's movement. He was arrested and submitted to brutal interrogations. Half a year later, in 1950, Helena Corda too was apprehended. She remembers that a few days before her arrest, she was followed by two men who watched her closely. When at the time of her arrest, she asked for a reason, she was merely shouted at, but was promised that she would be home again in a few hours. Instead of a few hours, Helena Corda spent 10 years behind prison walls. During this time, she was massively tortured. To force a confession out of her, she was beaten on the heels with batons. The methods of torture that were used can hardly be imagined by normal, sensitive people. Stasenka was not spared either from undergoing such cruel treatment. Helena Corda knew about this and learned also the details of tortures her husband had to undergo. She was cruelly tortured. He too was cruelly tortured. In the end, he was brought to a room that was filled with the exhaust fumes of cars. My husband was close to death of suffocation. When his face turned blue and he struggled for breath, ice cold water was poured over him and he was returned to his cell. Another time he was set barefoot in caustic soda over which water was poured. The solution burned the soles of the victim's feet, a process that was unbearably painful. My husband almost lost consciousness. Helena Corda herself too was a victim of the extreme torture. After 10 years of imprisonment, she was totally ruined physically and migrated with her son to England. Only since 1989 does she regularly visit her homeland, Slovakia, again. On the occasion of one of these visits, she spoke at length about her impressive encounter with Stasenka in the hospital for convicts in Prague, Poprad. Stasenka was admitted to that hospital from the prison at Podbis when surgery had become unavoidable. The testimony of Helena Corda was historical value, and this in view of Sister Zenga's biography and also as a document regarding the proceedings of the totalitarian regime at that time. She spent 3 weeks with Sister Zenga. Helena Goda, herself a political prisoner, was admitted to the above hospital for a hernia operation. She had contracted the hernia as a result of heavy physical force to carry iron bars for the construction of a railway line. Through surgery, the warden approached the patients asking, "Which one of you is capable of caring for a patient that has just undergone surgery? I know that you are in a weakened condition. Therefore, I cannot force anyone to assume this task." Helena Goda volunteered. She wanted to do something meaningful in that senseless place. Helping another sufferer seemed to be the right thing, although she was still weak herself. The warden was surprised to see that Helena Goda was serious in offering herself. She wrapped her clothes firmly around her body, added an additional towel, and collected her toilet bag. The warden then led her to a cell on the opposite side of the long corridor. She heard the heavy prison door fall shut and found herself alone in a cold, musty cell. There were 2 beds, but Helena Goda was alone. She felt chilled and suddenly afraid of what might happen. Time passed. From there, the near church, she heard the clock striking the hour. She lay down on one of the beds, covered herself with a thin blanket, and prayed to be strengthened for the task ahead of her. It was late afternoon when Helena Goda awoke with a start. The cell door was pushed open very noisily, and a bed on wheels was brought room. A woman lay on the bed, perfectly still. When she was left alone with the patient, she had a closer look at her. She lay before her motionless, deathly pale, almost transparent. Her eyes were closed. Helena Goda drew near the face that still looked so young and heard her breathing thinly. Indeed, the woman was still alive, but the effect of the strong anesthesia continued for several hours. Helena Goda sat on the edge of the bed and observed every slight movement, every slight twitch of the patient's face. When for some longer time she could detect no sign of life, she felt for her heartbeat. In doing so, she discovered a huge dressing that covered her breast. Eternity seemed to pass, and a clock in the church tower struck many more hours. Helena still sat on the edge of the bed and felt herself slowly calming down. It was as tough, as though an inexplicable calm emanated from this person who hovered somewhere between life. It seemed like a miracle when Sister Zenga finally awoke from her deep sleep, blinked, and then opened her eyes. Helena Coda had never seen such beautiful, bright and clear eyes, conveying an expression that he had so far seen only in the eyes of children. They expressed innocence and curiosity, but also sadness and pain. When the sick woman began to move, Helena Coda dared to ask who she was and of that she was suffering. Srizenga found the strength to tell her her name, by which Helena understood that she was a religious sister. But then she fell asleep again. That night Helena Coda slept little. She was aware of every sound, and she assured herself again and again that the patient entrusted to her was still breathing. Towards morning, she herself fell asleep. When she awoke, she found Sister Zenga's eyes fixed on her, and she smiled back. From the very beginning, the two women, who knew nothing about each other, felt an affinity, as though they had been acquainted for a long time. Gradually, Sister Zenga grew stronger. At long last, here was someone she could trust, and she shared many of her experiences. This must have given her great relief. Helena Coda recalls that she shared much about her childhood in Kriva and about her beloved profession as a nurse. Then suddenly the light of joy disappeared from her eyes, and she hinted at the fact that her life on earth would soon come to an end. Helena Coda was startled. How could a woman who was not at 40 talk like that? It was evident, however, that Sister Zenga was very ill. She dared not ask any further questions and waited until Sister Zenga would herself begin to speak. She never talked long, and only at intervals. As her wound was painful, no painkillers were intervals. It became clear to Helena that her companion's right breast had been amputated. Zenga suffered cancer in an advanced stage. Zenga spoke with a subdued voice when she described her arrest on that fateful morning in February 1952. She also spoke of the circumstances preceding her arrest, the reasons leading up to it. She confided that she had connections with people rendering help to those who wanted to escape across the border so as to save their lives. She also mentioned a certain priest to whom she had been close, without, however, giving away his name. In this connection, she said, deep emotion, "No one will ever be able to comprehend without personally going through the same experience. How very deep the love between two persons can grow, provided they stand for each other to the very limit." Then she placed a finger on her lips, indicating that it would be better not to speak of that priest again. At this point, she was interrupted by a warden who came to change her dressing. Helena Corda saw the terrible wound and got an inkling of the intensity of the pain it caused. Later on, Sister Sanger spoke of the tortures to which she had been submitted and how she had been beaten over her breast. This had finally resulted in the diagnosis of breast cancer and the need for surgery. Helena Corda was shocked, but sought to hide her dismay from the patient. But when Sister Zenka began to recount details, she could no longer control herself. After the flight of the condemned priest, that is Kostil, from the hospital at Bratislava, the state security had pressed her for whatever details she knew about his life. Above all, they wanted to know the names of the people who had assisted in the flight. Zenka remained silent, refusing to make a statement. For this, she was tortured. The clothes were torn off her body, then with hands and feet bound. She was kept hanging from a hook that had been screwed into the ceiling, thus totally at the mercy of three cruel men. She was humiliated in her dignity as a woman and a human being. Not satisfied with this, the sadist thrashed her defenseless body with batons, hitting her all over until she lost consciousness. It is to be surmised that Sister Zenka did not disclose details of everything she had to endure, not even to Helena Corda. The suspicion that she was raped suggests itself. The tormentors gave vent to their hatred of the church through the ill treatment meted out on this defenseless woman. Yet despite all her torments, she could not be forced to make a statement. She merely confessed that she had helped the priest to escape. Unconscious, humiliated, and broken after her punishment, she was covered with a sheet that brought to her cell, where she was thrown on the bare, cold stone floor. It is hard to ascertain how often Sister Zenka was exposed to the rage of, certainly more than once. At the time of the totalitarian regime, the members of the state security considered themselves infallible and just in resorting to any action, whereas the convicts were looked upon as non-persons without honor and dignity. Whatever entered the mind of their tormentors could be done to them documents labeled strictly confidential still exist, telling of the cruelties done to defenseless people at the hands of sadistic men. Today, as at that time, torture is a reality performed by professionals who know exactly what they are doing, and they are also aware that the seeds of their violence will still sprout many years later. They count upon long-term effects. Therefore, their deeds are never aimed merely at the inflicting of a passing pain. They aim at wounding their victim's soul, to humiliate and degrade, and in the long run, to break a person. Torture is never aimed just at an individual person, but at certain groups among a country's inhabitants. In our case, against representatives of the church or political opponents of the regime. Torture is always a political tool when employed by an authoritarian state, meant to create a climate of fear and insecurity, and always achieves this aim. Torture is not really concerned with discovering the truth. It seeks rather to cripple a person, both physically and psychologically. The victim should be made a living warning and a deterrent to others. As a rule, victims of torture become rather taciturn. They are able to speak about their experiences only in a fragmentary way. It is therefore not surprising that Sister Zenga, in her condition of total exhaustion after major surgery, could relate only a few of her horrible experiences. All men are born free, with equal dignity and equal rights. This is the introductory sentence to the first article on human rights, as declared in the General Assembly of the United Nations on 10th December 1948, which coincides with Sister Zenga's time of suffering. This sounds like mockery, for it is a fact that, according to statements made by Amnesty International, the worldwide movement for the promotion and defense of human rights, torture is still practiced today in 124 countries. Totalitarian states and police forces too, as well as the military, are resorting to torture. And the persons actually responsible for torture are those holding the highest positions. They are marked by an explicit elite consciousness and a conviction of being sent on mission for a particular purpose. This, in their mind, is the justification of using intensified methods of interrogation for the welfare of the state. These tortures can carry out their trade only. Because they act by order of politicians and under their protection. Representatives of governments who are actually responsible strongly oppose reproaches as propaganda of Arctic circles with vested interest. At the most they will concede that in the use of torture, regrettable singular incidents have happened. 100 years ago, the French journalist Victor Hugo wrote, "Torture has ceased to exist for good." This was a pious wish. The reality is that the use of torture ordered by state authorities has never been discontinued, and the methods used today are more refined than ever before.
Thank you.